I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Waukesha. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's gorgeous out. It's a proper summer day, Brian.
Yeah, it started to have a little humidity creep into the heat.
Yeah, I got my curly Qs going.
I have that every edges. Single day.
You're one big curly Q, Brian.
I am a curly Q. It doesn't matter what I do. It's going to end up that way anyway.
A curly Q.
Yep.
Whatever you do.
Yep.
Yes. Welcome. I hope y'all are doing fabulous out there. I know the Brewers are now up 7 games in the National League Central Division. Now they're up over Pittsburgh and the other 3 teams that will remain nameless.
Yeah, they're not good.
Yeah. That's what I like to see.
The Cubs were headed. They were up 3-2. They had a 3-2.
You can't
count.
Even say the words so bad.
Last out, last strike, and they just went, here's a home run. Here's the
never game. Mind. I want to start today with a reminder. It's day 8 of Biden's top 100. This week's theme, education, going to be joined by Dr. Johnny Lupinacci at the bottom of the hour. He is one of the 2 hosts of Civic Media's Busted Pencils, Educated Educators Talking Education. You can find them every Monday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station. But I wanted to begin today's subject matter where we left yesterday, because I really had a day to process it, which I think helped a little bit, because it's a lot. What I'm specifically talking about, if you missed us yesterday, don't worry, you can find the episode at civicmedia.us. But what we were talking about at the end of yesterday's show was these recordings, again,
supercilious?
You know.
I don't know.
Recorded by Cloak and Dagger, if I can say that. The woman who recorded these is a liberal filmmaker and documentarian. She didn't identify herself truthfully, which is a fundamental ethical principle of journalism. You cannot lie to people about who you are. She did. Justice Samuel Alito and other justices, including the Chief Justice, were secretly recorded at an annual black tie event for the Supreme Court Historical Society, a charity aimed at preserving the court's history and educating the public about the role of the court. Mostly it's a slush fund for the court. I could do a whole show about how this thing came to be, because its origin story is also interesting, but you have to be a member of this Supreme Court Historical Society, and the tickets were, I think, at least like $500 a piece. And yes, John from West Bend, I met that the woman recorded it surreptitiously. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
From West Bend. I know words and things sometimes. So Alito was there, so was Roberts. A woman claimed to be a very conservative Catholic, and she talked to both of the justices. What transpired is pretty shocking. Now, the audio quality is not great, so not our fault. We'll let it roll. I'll then summarize what Justice Alito said. She also recorded Martha Ann Alito, Justice Alito's wife, the alleged flag flyer, the upside-down American insurrectionist flag, and the appeal to heaven flag. And she has some thoughts on that. So we're gonna listen to this stuff. I'm going to tell you why I think this is really important. Again, fully acknowledging this does not meet journalistic standards because the woman lied about who she was. But boy, it's interesting what they'll say when they think they're amongst a friendly crowd. And what is most, most interesting here, and again, I'll pull all this together for you, is the contrast between what Justice Alito says to this liberal that goes to this gala under false pretenses. The difference between what Justice Alito says and what Chief Justice Roberts says. And the most interesting thing ends up being what Martha Ann Alito says, because I believe that based upon what she said and the recording of it, that Alito can't get out of an actual conflict of interest, not an appearance. We now have an actual conflict of interest. And should he not recuse himself from a series of cases, it is now my legal opinion that his impeachment is required. So let's start with the recording. This documentary filmmaker, her name is Lauren Windsor. Again, this is at the Supreme Court Historical Society's gala, I think last weekend. She put out this audio and then has been subsequently interviewed. I mean, it's getting her a lot of press, so she's got her own self-interest here. But, you know, the guy says what he says. So let's take a listen. This is Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito talking to Lauren Windsor on June 3rd.
As a Catholic and as someone who, like, really cherishes my faith, I don't know that we can negotiate with the left in the way that, like, needs to happen for the polarization to end. I think that it's a matter of, like, winning.
I think you're probably right. One side or the other. One side or the other is going to win. I don't know. I mean, there can be a way of living together peacefully, but it's difficult, you know, because there are differences on fundamental things that really can't be compromised. So it's not like we're going to split the difference.
And that's what I'm saying. I think that the solution really is, like, winning the moral argument. Like, people in this country who believe in God have got to keep fighting for that, to return our country to a place of godliness.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Okay. You have a sitting Supreme Court justice saying that one side or the other is going to win. There can be no compromise. You can't split the difference. And our country has to return to a place of godliness. Again, there's got to be a winner and a loser. We cannot compromise because you cannot split the difference. And we have to return the country to a place of godliness. In these statements, Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito has now violated his oath. He is impeachable for saying these things. Now, let's make no mistake. Supreme Court justices, judges, lawyers working in government, we all have our personal opinions about policies, about politics. We have our own religious views. But what you don't do is in public settings, and this was a public setting, mixed company, this wasn't necessarily a conservative gathering, is you don't share these views with a complete and total stranger. And the reason that you don't do that as a judge or someone in a high public office, and certainly never as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, is because of the oath that you take, which is to administer justice without respect to persons and to equal right to the poor and to the rich and to faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me. The words "without respect to persons" means without preconceived judgments, without prejudices built in, without a bias against certain belief systems, groups, political viewpoints, or social viewpoints that are different from your own. That's what that oath believes. This guy just said, no compromise. We got to bring godliness back to this country. He's saying that as a Supreme Court justice at a Supreme Court event. What he's articulating is an ideological worldview that's incompatible with objectivity and independence and fairness. That's the problem. It is, in fact, a demonstration of his lying at his confirmation hearing. Once you find yourself in this sort of a mind space, a mentality, it's actually incumbent upon Justice Alito or any judge that finds themselves, like Rebecca Bradley here on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, when you find yourself in this place where you cannot separate the law and your oath to be impartial without fear or favor, without respect to persons, when you find yourself in that headspace, you have an oath, a duty to this Constitution, to every single one of you and me, to retire. Because you can no longer be objective. Because you no longer can see a path to compromise. Because you don't believe that we can split the difference anymore. Because you don't believe that the laws are for everyone, not just the winners. And to hell with the losers. Shame on you, Justice Alito. You are now unfit to serve. You must step down and retire or be impeached. It's simply that simple. Simply that simple.
Basic. If only it was like that.
If only it was like that. And I haven't even gotten to what Martha Ann had to say, which basically makes it completely undebatable. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get your 2 cents in? Maybe even a nickel's worth. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back with y'all in just a moment. I break chains all by myself, won't let my freedom riding. Hey, I'ma keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
He loves you and he needs money.
I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get your 2 cents in via text or phone call 852-855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Justice Alito took an oath to administer justice without respect to persons, to faithfully and impartially discharge and perform his duties. He can't do that anymore. He doesn't understand the difference between his religious beliefs, his political beliefs, and the rule of law. Those have been completely conflated and he can't serve anymore. We know that because he told a woman, again, surreptitiously recording him, that he believes in cultural and political absolutes, that there's the losers, the wrong people, and the righteous, the right. We can't split the difference. There can be no compromise. We must return the country to godliness. That is a Supreme Court justice on a political and religious mission. A personal political and religious mission that is antithetical, incompatible with his duties as a Supreme Court justice. No one who is liberal or gay could ever hope or believe that they will be treated fairly before that justice, and therefore he is done. He cannot serve on that court anymore. By the way, here's a little example of how we know that Justice Alito doesn't know the difference between the rule of law and what he personally believes, his personal religious, political, and social beliefs. Every single time that the question of standing has come before the Supreme Court, this is wonky. Standing is whether or not you should actually be able to bring a lawsuit. Every single time that the question of standing has come before the Supreme Court, Justice Alito has ruled for conservatives 100% of the time and has ruled against liberals 100% of the time.
That seems a little bit polarized. I mean, again, my non-legal opinion, it seems a touch polarizing.
Let's see what Justice John Roberts had to say. Similar line of questioning from Laura Windsor, liberal documentary filmmaker, who again surreptitiously recorded both Justices Roberts and Alito at a fancy gala few days back. Let's take a listen to Justice Roberts.
You don't think there's like a role for the court in like guiding us toward a more moral path?
No, I think the role for the court is deciding the cases. If I start, would you want me to be in charge of guiding us toward a more moral path? That's for the people we elect. That's not for lawyers.
Well, I guess I believe that the founders were godly, like we're Christians. And right. I think that we live in a Christian nation. And that our Supreme Court should be guiding us in that path.
Yeah, I don't know that we live in a Christian nation. I know a lot of Jewish and Muslim friends who would say maybe not. And it's not our job to do that. It's our job to decide the cases as best we can.
Wow, it's almost like he went to middle school civics class and learned the separation of powers.
That's the point. You just roll those tapes between those two men at the same event, both conservative, both Christians. One is fit to serve, the other is not. Period, full stop. So not only has Justice Alito violated his oath, he is now unfit to serve. He has violated the very fundamental concept of the Establishment Clause, which set forth the separation of church and state, which Justice Roberts understood, plainly articulated. No, we don't do religion here. We do the law. He can't serve anymore. Oh, and, you know, the cherry on top of the Alito is unfit Sunday is that his wife is an unabashed, out loud, homophobic bigot of the highest order who wishes to use her husband's position of authority to bully and intimidate her neighbors, and who wants Donald Trump to win so that her husband can retire, so that Trump can appoint a conservative justice, so that she can sue the New York Times and other papers for breaking the flag story. She says this to us in this clip. So that she can sue the New York Times and other media publications to get even. I'm going to go get them, she says. And guess what that is, folks? That is an actual living, breathing conflict of interest for Justice Alito. Here are the words to listen for. She talks weirdly about a 5-year statute of limitations. I'll get them. I'm going to be liberated. I'm going to get them. Once my husband is free of this nonsense, she's talking about his retirement. She knows the statute of limitations for these sorts of claims. And she's saying she wants to go get them and sue them. She's referring to all this stuff. That means Trump's got to win, everybody. Let's take a listen. This is Martha Ann Alito at this same Fancy Pants event.
I'm a huge Katie resident.
It's okay because if they come back to me, I'll get them. I'm going to be liberated, and I'm going to get them.
Oh, well.
There's a 5-year defamation statute of limitations.
But I don't know what you mean by they. Like
the media.
Oh, okay.
Come on, I'll get you. Come on.
What? I'll get you. Do we have time for the other Martha Ann? Let's listen. Here's more.
You know what I want? I want a Sacred Heart of Jesus flag because I have to look across the lagoon at the Pride flag for the next month.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh, please don't put up a flag. I said, I won't do it because I'm deferring to you. But when you are free of this nonsense, I'm putting it up and I'm going to send them a message every day. Maybe every week I'll be changing the flags. There'll be all kinds. I made a flag in my head. This is how I satisfy myself. I made a flag. It's white and it's yellow and orange flames around it. And in the middle is the word vergogna. Vergogna in Italian means shame.
She's a prejudiced, hateful bigot who wants to get even, to have her retribution. Wait, have we heard that somewhere else? I am your retribution. Somewhere. Who wants to sue the people who made public the things that she so gleefully describes she wants to do more of. But he's got to be free of this nonsense. But there's a 5-year statute of limitations on defamation. I'm going to get him.
So free of the nonsense, are you sure it's about him retiring? Because are you sure about some sort of, I don't know, revolution where they're all in charge now? That's what I thought.
Yeah,
she was drunk enough to be excited about that.
That is the problem. Disgusting, unfit, impeachable. Alito's got to go, just like Rojo got to go. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. It is day 8 of Joe Biden's top 100. I'm going to be joined by one half of Busted Pencils, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, an educator educating me and you about education. Don't go anywhere. I can't wait. I know you can't either. Your farm update is next, and then I'll be back.
This is like a bowl of doggy do. Put a cherry on top and call it a chocolate sundae.
What's up, Wisconsin? We're coming to you live from downtown Waukesha. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. And our very special guest this half hour, celebrating day 8 of Joe Biden's top 100, is maybe the better half? I don't know. Can I say that, Johnny? The better half of Busted Pencils?
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you about that. I mean, come on. We got to take credit where we can.
It's like anytime you're talking to one half of any couple, it's always presumptively the better half.
That's right.
My thanks to your partner in crime for coming on Monday. Johnny Lupinacci is my guest this half hour. He is one of a team of co-hosts of Busted Pencils, which is an education-focused show that you can find here on the Civic Media Radio Network every Monday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Couldn't think of a better guest to have this week, so thanks so much, Johnny. Appreciate your time.
Oh, appreciate it. Love it. Love the show, and love to be a guest on it, so... So how are you, Maggie? How's it going?
I'm doing well. I want to jump right in because I remember very well taking all kinds of standardized tests when I was in school. It takes me like 2 hands and at least 1 foot, I think, to count all the teachers that I know. They hate these things.
Right.
And one of the reasons that I hear from them a lot that they hate about the tests is they have kids come into their classrooms, especially in MPS, that are all over the place. Like if you teach third grade, you're going to get, and you got a classroom of say 25, you're going to get 5 kids that are maybe at like third, fourth, fifth grade reading or math levels. You're going to have a couple that are basically at like first grade some that are right at sort of grade level. Kids are all over the place. They come into classes. There's a lot of pressure within every public school system to pass kids. Like they don't hold kids back anymore. We've sort of gotten rid of, quote, special education and separating and pulling kids out. So you're just seeing a lot of different cohorts of ability in any single grade level class. So then you do these standardized tests, and now teachers aren't trying to get the individual student to progress. They're trying to just ensure that the kids can do okay on the test so that the scores look right. Am I basically getting the problem?
I mean, correct? That's part of the problem. That's part of the problem for sure. I mean, it's kind of a rat's nest when we start to just dive into it. And that's why I kind of, you know, I'm glad you're starting with this high stakes testing, this stuff, you know, the bubble tests.
Yes.
That if we don't remember taking a ton of, ask anybody under the age of like 35 and most of their entire school experience was multiple times a year. sitting down at a desk with the pencils and the bubbles and going, and now there are more updated versions.
Yep.
So we're using less pencils, but still the same concept. You know, those standardized tests, we call them in the industry. And yet all of us teachers, we loathe them for a number of reasons. One, they aren't a great measurement of our students, you know, success. They're one way of sort of measuring where they're at with things. But the biggest problem, Maggie, about them is that they're linked to, it's kind of like a rat's nest of funding. You know, we haven't funded our public schools well, and that's a big issue for any government, right? And especially yep. should have been and continues to be one that the Democrats champion. They say, you know, we are going to fund public schools. We need that kind of funding. But what I'm saying is let's decouple it from the high stakes test scores, because that's the big pressure. We could just say, you know what, we're just going to teach the kids we know is the best way to teach it. You know, our state or our district has local control, and we really don't want to do these tests. They're not as important as maybe we thought. Let's not do them. Well, two things, Maggie. We don't get the money mm-hmm. that's promised to us when we take the tests. And that's kind of the biggest deal, right? Every teacher out there knows not only is it a burden on our teaching and connecting with students. And you were gracious enough to say, imagine you have 25 students. I know there's MPS teachers who are like, oh Lord, it would be great if I only had 25.
Right.
But more often than not, we have overcrowded classrooms, right? And we have an insurmountable list of needs that our students have. And that's not a problem for every teacher. Like, teachers love that. They love knowing they have diverse students with different needs. They're at different levels. That's like the fun and the joy of being a teacher. But then if you just pile in so many kids, and the way that their success is measured, both
right.
the students and the teacher, is how well they do on this standardized test, right? Which we also talk about a lot about on Busted Pencils. We bring on experts and we've debunked not only. So if you're a listener out there and you're like, man, I know that I get this kind of report back from the school or from the teacher. We go to conference and we go over the scores, right? Of the standardized tests or the district tests. And I get to see where my kid is at on against a national average and against the local district. And they're either above or below. And they start using this language around proficient
yes.
or not proficient. And here, we're just going to simplify the myth for a listener out there. Why I say this is an issue to decouple it from funding. Because this is an industry. We talk about the dangers of privatizing our public education system. Because this is an industry, there are all kinds of curriculum supports and tutoring programs that we have to buy if our kids aren't proficient. Well, here's the myth busting. A majority of kids are actually at grade level or proficient, and there are those that aren't, and we need supports around those for sure. But if we can keep increasing the number of students who are not proficient, right, then what we can do is we can increase the amount of things that schools need to buy, districts need right. to purchase. And so we're creating this sort of dangerous game of like kind of bogus economics that really hurts schools, teachers, and families, right?
Well,
it's not the kind of economic game we want to be playing.
No, it's kind of like the prison industry. Well, if we lock more people up, then there's a whole.
I mean, those two things, Maggie, are really close, because if you could give me a wish list, that would also be the school to prison, you know, nexus, the school to prison pipeline. Like, investing in education means we can de-invest in prisons and really work towards restorative justice and strong communities.
Well, and there is, I've listened to some social justice advocates mm-hmm. and activists take on the most recent data that effectively debunks this continuing mythology of the school to prison pipeline. We've got fewer kids that are getting arrested for serious violent crime. It's just there. It's less everywhere, mm-hmm. in any demographic cohort, and it's less for younger people. One of the things that gets sort of bound up in this, when people talk about or refer to, of course, the school to prison pipeline, is this inevitability of it, right? And it enables a certain how do I say this? It enables or encourages, it reinforces this idea that the tests do as well, that the, oh, there's just this unreachable group of kids that inevitably are simply going to end up in prison. And oh, gee, what are we doing about that? If that's not true, if what you are saying and many other teachers are saying is that we can actually, wherever kids come into the grade that we're teaching in a year, every single one of those kids is going to make some significant gains over the year. And if we stop teaching to test, if we stop obsessing about these kinds of things, what sort of possibilities does that open up for our kids? You talk mm-hmm. about kids who are neurodivergent, who have behavioral issues. Sitting for a two-hour test for a kid who's neurodivergent, and yes, they have some accommodations for these things, but we're still cramming a lot of square peg kids into testing round holes, and it's just such a mismatch. The other thing I wanted to mention, when you talk about this entire huge supplementary, massive, especially primary education course materials.
Billion dollar industry.
It is massive. And oh, by the way, not only is it a massive industry and we freak parents out and then they go, what do I do in the tutoring industry? That stuff didn't used to exist. I'm 47, right? There were, at times, somebody had a tutor. The industries that existed were some of these, what have now spawned all these curriculum support systems. They often are the same holding companies that used to exist back when you and I were kids that were basically just for like ACT and SAT prep, LSAT prep, GMAT prep, and the MCAT. Don't worry if you don't know all the alphabet soup I just threw at you, but they were all of the college
high stakes tests that came later in your education.
Yeah. College admissions tests, med school admissions mm-hmm. tests, graduate school admissions tests, and law school admissions tests. And they had these rich kids I knew would get to go to these classes so that they could knock out the stupid sections on those tests that were big score drivers that have no practical application. Small footnote here. Again, I'm tangenting. I apologize.
No.
The law school admissions test that's going to be given this July will be the first LSAT given in like 35, 40 years that doesn't have the logic game section because they finally figured out it was dumb and had no relationship to actual lawyering skills. We test for testing's sake. We test because there's anxiety in this individualistic country about how is my kid stacking up against other kids when it should be, is my kid progressing? Am I leaning into the skills that they're and that their aptitudes that they're great at while bringing along and focusing also on some of the things that they've got weaknesses regarding? I love that this was your number one thing to talk with me about. I feel personally, really passionate.
I love that you're connected to it. And it's so true, right? I mean, even if we go all the way up to the highest quality programs for higher education, we talk about law schools and all these things, that test is merely just one aspect and a way to make some kind of consideration or decision that like
it's
thousands
totally
of kids
arbitrary.
Yeah. Everyone who teaches in those programs knows this is not really an indicator of good career success, of intelligence, of all these things. So it's one.
Zero of those things.
Yeah, zero of those things. So
it's funny.
Everybody has to pay $300, $400 to take it.
I was just going to say, and when we look at the testing industry itself, that is part of this massive $1 billion-plus a year industry. These testing companies aren't government agencies for the most part. They're external vendors that governments pay hundreds of millions of dollars to, in aggregate, to operate, craft, and come up with these tests. We haven't even gotten into the manipulation of both tests and curriculum materials to fit certain political agendas. I bet you and I, Johnny, could spend an entire two-hour show talking
you
about
it. Sometime, anytime.
I would love that.
We just start going at it. That's a huge thing, and I'd love it.
It's a big deal. And I hate to use my own reference point, but it though it is a personal reference point, it is generally applicable. And that is, lawyers joke all the time, the LSAT tests your ability to take the LSAT.
That's right.
Law school, when you turn to that, the joke is people that get A's in law school become law school professors. People that get B's become judges. And people that get C's become great lawyers. Those that get D's become doctors. Just a little joke there. I want to talk about a bit about what Joe Biden is doing to support teachers, some of what he's accomplished in his first term. I'm going to throw a little something at you, right? We're going to take a couple of minutes. I believe I shared this with your co-host on Monday, but for about a decade now, I have been saying to people, if there was one magic switch I could flip that I think within 5 years' time would have an absolutely existentially positive impact on education at every level, would be to mandate that the minimum salary that any teacher earns from pre-K up through grade 12 is $200,000 a year. Guess what? Fewer lawyers, which is a plus. Fewer doctors, probably a plus, except in rural environments that we want more doctors and they should be paid $200,000 a year minimum. But all of a sudden, you got people flooding into that profession. I'm Maggie Dawn. My special guest this half hour is Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, co-host of Busted Pencils here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to take a couple of quick messages and come right back. You've got a question, comment, thought? We want to hear it. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
We're not doctors.
Listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's day 8 of Biden's top 100. This week's theme is education. Joining me this half hour is Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, a PhD educator, engaged teacher, unabashedly fearless in talking about what works and what doesn't. Before we get back to the meat and potatoes, I have a favorite question to ask nerdy folks, which I say with love because I too am a nerd.
Nerd up. Let's nerd up together.
So I have certain word things that bother me to no end when people use them. And at the top, maybe not the top, but it's probably top three is the word irregardless.
Oh, it's not even a word.
They've added it. Now,
oh, did they add it?
Which is really upsetting to me because the word regardless covers it. That is the entirety of the meaning. Adding an IR, same word. Don't use the extra two letters.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite word peeve?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Espresso.
Oh, if they call it espresso.
Ooh, I've got another one for you, Johnny. Uh-huh. And there are a number of, there was one elected official in particular that says this all the time. ETC period is an abbreviation for the word to et cetera, Latin, right? Elected official I used to work with, et cetera, et cetera. Like, what? I'm sorry, are we having omelets? What's happening? All right.
Yeah. I mean, related, I guess it's related. The word stuff, it doesn't bother me as much. You nailed the first one for years. Irregardless has just driven me probably. I think we share that same word as like, I mean, I was taught early by other people. I think it's a word peeve people share.
Yes, widely. It is.
Because I remember my teachers, which happened to be, you know, priests and nuns who were real strict about, you know,
not a word.
First of all, that's not a word. And so, you know, it was ingrained into my head. But akin to that, I get like, I have a love hate for this. And my co-host will get a kick out of this sarcasm. I love when people have a command of it. I'm like jealous almost of their command of the use of sarcasm, but I never catch it. So my entire life I've been like, wait, is that sarcastic.
Johnny's not in on the joke.
Yeah, I'm not in on the joke from early on. So, you know, it's almost like it's a word peeve related. It's yeah, like
anything. It is. It's an adjacency, I would say. I have two others. The prolific use of the word literal. Well, literally. Stop with that. Yeah. Just completely.
That's actually not the use of the word literal.
Exactly. I also somewhatly. I've heard that before. It's sort of like irregardless. Somewhat is the entirety of the word that you need. No ly necessary. Difference between affect, effect. That one drives me bananas. I love someone just texted in the expression "my bad."
Well, and here's one that's generational. My students, I'm old now, but my students use the word aesthetic differently than the term aesthetic or aesthetics is used for. I'm like, oh, like that is a cool aesthetic. And they're like, well, no, that is aesthetic. And I was like, no, I have an aesthetic.
Oh, they mean it like generally. They're,
yeah.
Like well, it's a like vibe.
There's a vibe that is called aesthetic and it's generational. And I'm going to pick, I love millennials and Gen Zers. I mean, I do. They're my students. They are the ones that are, they're going to change this world. I know it. But they're going to need our help, Maggie, right? I think we're Gen Xers on that, yes. You know. We're there doing that grunt work. We feel that same thing. But they've taken so many of the terms that we grew up with and sort of coined and had, and they've taken them and reassigned them to things.
Yes.
So that's another one of my adjacent pet peeves is when I'm like, I'm trying to be like, man, I love this upcoming gen, but also stop taking our words and changing them and then telling us we're wrong about them.
Yeah. I actually love the word Riz that they added to lexicon.
Sure.
Because of it, the specificity of the thing that it connotes, right? Like it means this, it's not just game. You got like talking game. You got vibe. Like you're cool. People want to hang with you. You got Riz. Like I love that. A couple of other texters getting in on this. And listen, if we don't get to some of the Joe Biden things, I'll have you hang around.
Sure.
If you got time, because I love this. Oh, Sherry from Horicon hates at the end of the day. I hate that one. Oh. At the end. No, try this. In summary, that works. In summary, or to some. I also hate fillers like the fact that. You don't need that. You can just say the thing. You don't need the fact that. It's just totally superfluous, right? Like it's just totally unnecessary. Greg from Waukesha telling me that Johnny is on fleek and my show is bussin.
Love it. Bussin. Like, yeah, we're getting down with this, so we're getting all the lingo in there.
I love it. Another
podcast is my ops.
Right? Another texter from the 414 saying the overuse of the word narrative. There is.
I love that word.
I do too, but there definitely is trending in language and word usage. There is generationally specific lingo, but as a lawyer, I'm a word nerd. That's what I do for a living, which is why it was so completely shameful for me to not remember the word surreptitious at the beginning of the show. That was fun. Just mangled the heck out of that. My guest this half hour is Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. He is an educator. We are talking about education because it is Education Week here on the Maggie Dawn Show. It is the theme of the show this week. Today is day 8 of Biden's Top 100. We're going to take a couple of quick messages. You are going to hear news, weather, and sports. When you come back, you're not going to want to go anywhere because I'm going to have the secret word of the hour that you will then text via the Civic app to win all kinds of cool summer stuff and getaways. In our statewide Scotty Summer Text to Win, your secret word is coming up next. More with Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, one half of Busted Pencils, here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Mondays through Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Word. I can't wait.
Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it.